WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noah Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
talking the news with Noah
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me. Good morning. It is Tuesday, March 12th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. A sunny, warm day on the way. High 62 tonight and overnight. Clear, low 46. It's a stretch of really nice days. And then tomorrow, sun and clouds, high 65. If you are walking out the door with us right now, 42 and clear in Pleasantville up in Westchester County. It's 37 and partly cloudy in Bud Lake down in New Jersey. And it is 43 and clear outside our Midtown studios. Now, apparently yesterday when I started the program, I forgot to mention the day of the week and what day of the month it was. And I got a call after the show from my father saying that I had forgotten to do this. He listens to the podcast hours later. So just the thought that my father had been walking around most of the day yesterday, not knowing what day of the week it was and what day in March it was, is a little concerning. But he apparently was very thrown off by this, even though he is 7 hours ahead. So that means he listened to the podcast at... I put it up about 8 o'clock, so it was like 3 p.m. yesterday. So he went all day Monday until 3 o'clock, not knowing apparently what day of the week it was. So, maybe I'll have my brother, check in on him a little more often. Now, he's fine, but he wanted me to know that he was very concerned that I had left that out at the beginning of the show. All right, we got a lot to get to as we work our way up to the 6 o'clock hour. Sid and friends, in the morning, we are watching the aftermath of those high winds that caused all kinds of destruction across the tri-state yesterday. Man, was that intense, right? I mean, there were some moments that things were just flying around, strong wind gusts. It was, some of it was as promised, 40, 50 miles per hour. We watched on as a wind gust sent a tree crashing into a car. Prospect Park, Brooklyn. Up in Rockland County, a tree topped a power line in Ramapo, forcing some power outages. Also, several reports out of New Jersey where the wind caused trees to fall across a bunch of different areas. In Hillsdale, a massive tree crashed through a home right into a kitchen.
My kitchen's in the front, and all of a sudden I heard a crack. And I looked, and here comes this tree. The noise, I thought, oh, my God.
Yeah, so that was the neighbor. She heard the tree fall into her next-door neighbor's home. She ran over to see if he was okay.
I rang his bell because I didn't know if he... I knew he was in the house. And I was like, oh, my God, and I'm ringing the bell.
So the good news is homeowner Michael Sokol is okay. The strange part of this story was... he didn't realize a tree had crashed into the middle of his home until his neighbor had knocked on his door.
And I was sitting there having coffee, and I heard, you know, bang, bang, and I thought maybe it was a truck from the grocery store unloading, you know, the stuff, and next thing I know, she's on my front steps.
Yeah, if you saw the damage it's done, it's amazing this guy did not notice until the doorbell rang. He is a first-time homeowner, of course, and now he's going to have to pay a whole lot to get that fixed.
There was no warning. There was no snaps from the tree, you know, from the branches breaking off. It was just... in the house.
Yeah, so we got reports from all across the tri-state. Nothing as intense as that. Thankfully, no major injuries in Hoboken, though. A 33-year-old hit in the back when an awning fell off a store on Washington Street. The woman was taken to the hospital with complaints of lower back pain. That taking place as the flooding started to happen in some of these communities in North Jersey from all the rain over the weekend. We had told you about this yesterday. A lot of these communities on edge. Thankfully, it is not going to be as bad as it was back in January, but these communities that are on the Passaic River, they've been flooded three times in the last 3 months. Steady rain over the weekend, bloating the Passaic and Saddle Rivers, high water levels, and so people had water into their basements, on their front lawns.
My whole yard was flooded. Everything. Yes, my son's room got destroyed. Look, it's already up. So I gotta get ready for it.
Yeah, so yards that were already submerged now have more water. Again, not as catastrophic as some of that flooding was last time, but not great either. Some streets cut off. They're waiting for the water to recede.
It just keeps getting worse and worse. They didn't even clean up all the garbage over there or nothing since the last two floods.
Yeah, so, right. Well, people were still cleaning up from the January flood. Lodi, it was the same thing. Some streets turning into small rivers. Some of that receding overnight.
Right now, I see it like it's going up. So we kind of worry.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, this all came on the same day that North Jersey Congressman Josh Gottheimer announcing this federal money is coming to North Jersey to address these flooding problems that just become bigger every single year, announcing that more than $3.5 million approved to help with flooding related problems in four Bergen County communities.
These surge floods, these massive incidents in short periods of time wreak such havoc because the systems weren't built to handle so much water in a short period of time.
Yeah, and it just seems to be a constant. It happens more and more than it ever did before. In this case, the money is going to go to these Bergen County towns, Emerson, Leonia, Englewood, Tenafly, where they've had storm water runoff problems, sewer problems, flooding problems.
We've seen bridges collapse, roads cave, cars destroyed, homes gutted, and families left without a home.
Yeah, so Gottheimer says the federal money will go a long way because most small communities can't make significant flood prevention investments with their own money. They just don't have that kind of money. We watched on yesterday as a New Jersey journalist who had been jailed in his native Nigeria for years was able to go back home. His name is Yewe Sawari. He's back in the tiny Bergen County community of Haworth after nearly 5 years behind bars in Nigeria on what he says are trumped up treason charges.
Sometimes I never thought I would make it back here alive.
Yeah, so there was quite a party for him yesterday. The 53-year-old journalist and activist who edits a news website called Sahara Reporters was imprisoned after running for president back in 2019, losing, and then returning to Nigeria to organize a protest. They threw him behind bars and almost essentially forgot about him for all that time.
When elections were badly mismanaged, we went back and organized a protest tagged the Revolution Now, and I was arrested before the protest could take place.
Yeah, so the good news, he's back home, and as we mentioned before, Josh Gottheimer, he apparently was instrumental in working with the State Department to secure his release and bring him back home to New Jersey. WABC News Time 509. It is a primary day, but this primary season seems like it's essentially over. Several states holding presidential nominating contests today. Voters going to head to the polls in Georgia, Hawaii, Mississippi, and Washington. This as both President Biden and former President Donald Trump are assured to win their party's nominations. Trump is expected to clinch the nomination today when the voting is done. Biden probably sometime next week. Both candidates were holding dueling rallies in Georgia over the weekend as they campaigned to win that critical swing state come November. Top intelligence officials warning of the greatest threats that are facing the U.S. and the world right now.
During a hearing on Capitol Hill Monday, Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines says authoritarian powers are increasing, trying to undermine U.S. interests. She warned that China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea are expanding cooperation with one another, highlighting the need for sustained U.S. leadership. Haines added that emerging technologies like AI have enabled bad actors to carry out significant attacks on institutions around the globe. There's also been a massive increase in ransomware attacks, with U.S. entities the most heavily targeted. I'm Lisa Taylor.
WABC News Time 510. Let's go out to California. 100 migrants caught on video racing across the border in San Diego yesterday. Laura Ramirez shot the video as she was crossing through the port of entry into San Diego.
Saw a lot of women, children, men crossing. As a mother, I did really worry about the children. I saw children falling down, getting just pulled, trying to run. A lot of really small children trying to run and parents just going for it.
Yeah, so this large group apparently crossed about a half mile from the port of entry.
Well, it did kind of worry me that there's a lot of kids going through that.
That going on as senators were grilling the head of the FBI yesterday over a surge of illegal immigration and what kind of threat that poses to the U.S. Oklahoma Republican Senator James Lankford is worried about the so-called special interests aliens.
A non-U.S. person who, based on analysis of travel patterns, potentially poses a national security risk.
He says unlike people on the FBI's terror watch list, there are no numbers in how many special interest aliens are being caught. FBI Director Christopher Wray telling the Senate Intelligence Committee yesterday that he shares this concern over lapses in security.
Often such individuals or groups are employing travel patterns known or evaluated, possibly have a nexus to terrorism. We know the number is in the thousands, but have not been able to get a specific number nor a specific tracking on that.
And President Biden continues to pressure Congress to take up that recent bipartisan border deal. Delivering remarks before the National League of Cities in Washington yesterday, President noted how he felt the deal would improve the crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border.
This bill would save lives, bring order to the border. It has the funds that many of our cities badly need as well.
Yeah, and he was telling these people who showed up at this convention in D.C. yesterday to pressure their members of Congress to sign off on the deal.
It would also give me as president a new emergency authority or any other president temporarily to shut down the border when a number of immigrants is overwhelming and to regain control of the border. Border Patrol Union endorsed it. The Federal Chamber, the National Chamber of Commerce endorsed it. And I believe, given an opportunity, the House and Senate have the votes to pass it if they just bring it to the floor and vote on it.
The bill, negotiated by a bipartisan group of senators, has stalled as Republicans claim it doesn't go far enough to stop the flow of illegal immigration. 513, Scott Peterson is still trying to clear his name 20 years after being convicted of murdering his wife and unborn son.
In a Tuesday hearing, the Los Angeles Innocence Project is hoping a judge will allow them to get additional evidence from the first trial that they say could clear his name. Peterson was convicted in 2004 and given the death penalty, but in 2020, the California Supreme Court overturned the sentence, and the 51-year-old is now serving life without the possibility of parole. Lacey Peterson's body was found in the San Francisco Bay in 2003. I'm Dina Kodiak.
Still lots of fallout over this Nancy Mace interview on ABC's This Week over the weekend. The congresswoman from South Carolina showed up on with Sid on Sid and Friends in the morning. She got into this back and forth with George Stephanopoulos over the backing of Donald Trump, considering these allegations, these sexual assault allegations against him. The South Carolina Republican is a rape survivor, and Stephanopoulos noted that Trump was found liable for sexual assault in the E. Jean Carroll case, and so he wanted to know why she was supporting him, and they got into this fight, and she's talking about what this fight was like with Sid yesterday.
I was so shocked and dismayed by the line of questioning. George Stephanopoulos tried to bully me and shame me as a rape survivor over my support for Donald Trump.
And she said she wanted the world to know, and George Stephanopoulos for that matter, that the case against Trump was not a criminal case. Mace says Stephanopoulos doesn't know that shame comes with rape, and she says that's part of the reason why this interview was just awful with him on Sunday morning.
George Stephanopoulos, he has never felt the shame of rape. He does not know what this journey is like. It's a journey of healing over a lifetime.
Yes, we've heard a lot from Nancy Mace since that interview. Nothing, though, that I've seen anyway from George Stephanopoulos. All right, 515. Let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Tuesday. Good morning, Justin Ellick.
Happy Tuesday. Good morning to you, Noam Layden, starting with the NHL and the Rangers at the Garden. Mika Zibanejad and Eric Gustafson scored in the second period, and the Rangers beat the rival Devils 3-1 last night. Vincent Trocheck also scored, and Jonathan Quick made 20 saves as the first-place Rangers won their second straight after losing 3 of 4. New York is 14-3-2 in its last 19 games and beat New Jersey for the third straight time this season after the Devs won their first-round series in 7 games last spring. The Devils lost for the 8th time in 11 games and for the 3rd time in 4 games under interim coach Travis Green, who replaced Lindy Ruff on March 4th. The Blue Shirts now make a quick trip down to Carolina. Well, they'll face off at the Hurricanes tonight at 7 p.m. Out west in L.A., the Islanders' 6-game winning streak was snapped at the hands of the Kings. Final score 3-0 last night. The Islanders didn't convert on any of their 5 power play opportunities and were blanked for the 5th time. They are tied with Detroit for the Eastern Conference's 2nd wild card with 72 points. Local NBA action returns tonight with the Knicks getting set to welcome in the Philadelphia 76ers for the 2nd of a 2-game series at the Garden. A tip-off there is scheduled for 7:30 p.m. tonight. And out of the wild day that was yesterday with the arrival of free agency in the NFL. Tough to remember right now who's on what team, but we'll do our best starting with the big news, obviously, relating to the New York Giants and the exit of now former Giants running back Saquon Barkley, who reached an agreement with the division rival Philadelphia Eagles on a three-year, $37.75 million contract that could be worth up to $46.75 million and includes $26 million fully guaranteed at signing. Sayonara, Saquon.
Crazy, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, welcome on home.
Yeah. Well, I guess he just has to take the turnpike down to, you know.
Well, he grew up in the greater area and went to Penn State. Big star running back at Penn State. So, you know, you can make the argument he's got more of a claim to Pennsylvania than he does New York.
I think he's from the Bronx, though, isn't he?
Is he?
I thought so.
I thought he was from the Allentown area. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
I'll
I'm wrong.
Look it up.
Right. All right, yeah. We knew. I mean, it sounds like neither of us have any clue.
No, that's right. And we're on the air, which is even funnier.
Exactly. Who let these two guys on? Incoming for the G-Men, our former Green Bay Packers guard, John Runyon on a three-year deal. Former Las Vegas Raiders offensive tackle, Jermaine Lemonar on a two-year deal. Former Houston Bronx. Really?
Yep.
How about
yep.
that?
See
okay.
You.
So, Gnome.
Wow, I love being right.
Jeez.
I know.
How did you know that?
I stand corrected.
Wow. I don't know how I knew that. It's very odd that I did.
Yeah.
Wow, more useless knowledge or useful.
Yeah.
Nice.
Former Las Vegas Raiders offensive tackle Jermaine Lemonar on a two-year deal is coming to New York. Former Houston Texans running back Devin Singletary on a three-year deal worth $16.5 million. He'll be Saquon's replacement. And pass rusher Brian Burns from the Panthers. Via trade, the Giants are signing him to a five-year, $150 million contract.
Is he any good, this guy from Texas?
Yeah, he is good.
Oh, all right.
So he'll be a good get. He's probably the best get they got yesterday, the Giants. That's your biggest incoming new shiny name. Out in Jets land, Gangrene signed quarterback Isaiah Oliver to a one-year contract. Chuck Clark is coming back on a one-year deal. Kicker Greg Zuerlein agreed to a two-year, $8.4 million contract, which includes $4.2 million guarantee. And lastly, former New York Giants quarterback Tyrod Taylor and former Baltimore Ravens guard John Simpson also in a route to Gangrene. Other notable moves around the league include Bengals releasing Joe Mixon and reaching a deal with Zach Moss, QB Kirk Cousins leaving the Vikings for a four-year deal with the Falcons, running back Josh Jacobs signed a four-year deal with the Packers, running back Tony Pollard is headed to Tennessee on a three-year deal, and running back DeAndre Swift leaves Philly for Chicago on a three-year deal, and running back Gus Edwards signs a two-year deal with the LA Chargers. A lot of shakeup with the running backs in your National Football League, Gnome. That's your sports, and I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 520. Former President Trump says a TikTok ban would only empower Facebook.
The thing I don't like is that without TikTok, you can make Facebook bigger. And I consider Facebook to be an enemy of the people, along with a lot of the media.
The Republican presidential nominee says there's a lot of good and there's a lot of bad with the Chinese-owned TikTok, but he predicted that banning it would only help Meta, which owns Facebook, double in size.
We have to very much go into privacy and make sure that we are protecting the American people's privacy and data rights.
That contrasts with the view of President Biden, who says he would sign a bill to ban the app if Congress were to pass it. U.S. national security officials have warned Biden that TikTok remains a security threat because it's owned by a China-based company. About 170 million Americans are on TikTok. President Biden, meanwhile, calling on Congress to work with his administration now to lower health care costs.
I'm thinking about millions of Americans out there who are lying in bed at night staring at the ceiling wondering, what if it happens? What if it happens to me? How am I going to pay for it?
The president was in New Hampshire on the campaign trail yesterday outlining his health care agenda, which includes expanding the Affordable Care Act and capping out-of-pocket drug costs for seniors on Medicare.
I'm doing everything I can to lower the health care costs to provide people with peace of mind, not at the expense of doctors or medicine or hospitals or drug companies, but just to make it fair.
Yeah, and then this story just won't go away. Sometimes you just got to get out of the way, but the White House, I can't figure out what's going on, but the White House now insists that President Biden did not apologize for using the word illegal in connection to the rape of murder of Lake and Riley. A deputy press secretary stressed this point yesterday.
There was no apology anywhere in that conversation. He did not apologize.
Yeah, but then Sunday, Biden was on MSNBC, said he regretted using the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed the Georgia college student and should have called him undocumented After he made the remark during his State of the Union speech, Biden took some heat from Democrats for using that term. Meanwhile, Democrats backing the president's plan to increase the tax rate for America's super wealthy. California Congressman Ro Khanna says he agrees with Biden that they should have to pay their fair share.
I think someone who's a multimillionaire, billionaire, should pay at least as much percent of their income in tax as a teacher or a firefighter or a police officer. I think that's what the president is saying.
But Republicans argue the top 10% of earners in this country already pay about 90% of the money that goes into the federal treasury.
I went after companies that were doing single source contracts with our Pentagon budget.
WABC News Time 523. Let's go overseas. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he and President Biden don't always see eye to eye.
Look, we have our agreements on the basic goals, but we also have disagreements on how to achieve them. Ultimately, it's Israel that has to decide. Our neck is on the line.
Netanyahu's comments come after Biden was caught on a hot mic after last week's State of the Union address, saying he told the Israeli leader they'll have a come to Jesus meeting. In an interview with MSNBC over the weekend, Biden also said Israel invading the city of Rafah in Gaza would be crossing a red line.
I've seen these recent polls where 82% of Americans support Israel in its battle against Hamas. 82%. That's been constant over the last 5 months. So they recognize that our battle is your battle and our victory is your victory.
Netanyahu stressing yesterday that the relationship is okay with President Biden. He says they've had about a dozen heart-to-heart conversations since the start of the Israel-Hamas war. As the violence escalates in Haiti, the country's just overrun by gangs. South Florida Congresswoman Sheila McCormick is calling for Prime Minister Ariel Henry to hand over power now to a transitional government.
We are demanding that not one gang member, not one gang leader is included in the transition government and the Presidential Transition Council, and that we can actually have the civil society.
Congresswoman McCormick is the co-chair of the Haiti caucus. Last year alone, she says there were nearly 5,000 murders, 2,000 kidnappings in the nation.
It's been deterring even further. The gangs have said if he does return to Haiti, that there would be a civil war. So we're asking that he's not coming back. We are not assisting him to go back. So the multinational security mission is intended to stabilize the country, to remove the gang members' influence, and also to have a transition that will allow democracy to stand.
Yeah, and over the last 48 hours, U.S. personnel in Haiti have been told to leave the country. Health officials in the U.S. monitoring just the slew of new measles cases.
Doctors at UC Davis Health in Sacramento, California are trying to contact around 300 people who may have been exposed to the virus. Officials say a child was treated at the facility on March 5th after traveling abroad. Chicago is now also reporting its first case of the virus since 2019. According to the CDC, as of March 7th, 45 measles cases were reported by 17 jurisdictions in the U.S. Measles spreads easily when an infected person is breathing, coughs, or sneezes. It can cause severe disease, complications, and even death. Measles can affect anyone, but it's most common in children. I'm Dina Kodiak.
It's amazing. It's making a comeback. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson says the state of NASA is strong and getting stronger as he announced President Biden's budget proposal for the space agency for the coming fiscal year.
And that budget is $25.4 billion. That's an increase of $500 million over the previous fiscal year, 24.
Nelson says the space agency fared a whole lot better than some other agencies as lawmakers seek to cut spending as the national debt continues to grow. Nelson says NASA will continue its work to send humans back to the moon and on to Mars and beyond.
What we know in the past as the dream, it continues. The dream is alive. Those launch pads, Apollo 11, the first to land on the moon, and just last week, Crew 8 and those pads that Artemis 2 and all of Artemis will launch.
Yeah, good time for NASA. The opening bell, it rings this morning on Wall Street. After a mixed closing on Monday, stocks wavered ahead of fresh inflation data with February's consumer price index out this morning. Technology shares struggled with Facebook parent company Meta Platforms down more than 4%. So at the closing bell, the Dow gained nearly 47 points. S&P 500 fell 5. The Nasdaq lost 65 points.
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
Talking the News with Noam
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 5:33. Good morning. It is Tuesday, March 12th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Sunny, warm day on the way today. High 62 tonight and overnight clear. Low 46, and then we'll do it all over again tomorrow. Wednesday, sun and clouds, a little warmer, high 65. If you're walking out the door with us right now, so happy you are. 42 and clear in Pleasantville up in Westchester County. 37, partly cloudy in Bud Lake down in New Jersey. And 43, and we'll call it broken clouds here in Midtown. We'll start this half hour right here in the city where an arrest warrant has been issued for a landlord who has repeatedly been deemed New York City's worst. Now, if you've been listening to this show for any period of time before I came back, when I was here last time at WABC, we used to do this segment where we would find the city's worst landlords, and then we would call them on the air at 5 in the morning to wake them up, to tell them to fix everything that was wrong, until, I guess, some legal stuff got in the way, and we couldn't do it anymore. But this is a guy who deserved a wake-up call. The city's Department of Housing and Development got the warrant for Daniel Oheb Shalom's arrest, holding him in contempt of court for failing to correct problems addressed during a hearing more than a year ago. These are, like, really serious stuff. Deplorable conditions that his tenants are living in Washington Heights, crumbling walls, ceilings, along with trash-filled stairwells, rats everywhere. Just last year, a city official stood alongside residents as they denounced this landlord. He has apparently 700 open violations for a number of buildings across the city. In the case of this one building, it's 170th Street in Washington Heights. Neighbors there say it's just awful situation.
Suddenly I heard him scream, and when I went into the room, the ceiling had collapsed over him. And thankfully, you know, it wasn't a major injury, but I mean, it hit his head.
Yeah, here she's talking about her kid being in a room and hearing him scream out in the middle of the day. The view from this building shows rats on the ground. This landlord topped the worst landlord list last year. So it was 2 years in a row that he won an award that nobody wants. And now they're looking for him so they can throw him behind bars.
They would withdraw the rent straight out of our bank account every month. But then we get no heat for 5 days every week. 3 days with heat, the rest of the time no heat, no hot water.
Yeah, a lot of these tenants in these buildings at 705 and 709 West 170th Street complaining about the fact that there's no heat. At times there's no water. So if they do catch up with Oheb Shalom, and I imagine it's just a matter of time, he'll spend 60 days in jail when they find him, which is something that his tenants say he deserves.
You need to pay for what you did. So you can't keep the building? Give it to us.
Yeah, so in regard to the arrest warrant, Public Advocate's Office said it's a signal to the city's worst landlords that severe negligence will lead to severe consequences. And that sounds about right. If you're not going to do right by your tenants, you should have to pay for it. In the case of Oheb Shalom, it could mean he'll spend 2 months behind bars. WABC News Time 5:38. We now know who those two victims were, whose body parts were spread in parks across Long Island last week. The female victim, 59-year-old Donna Connolly. The male victim, 53-year-old Malcolm Craig Brown. Their body parts located on February 29th and March 5th. The four people who are accused of cutting their body parts into pieces somehow are still walking the streets. Are out. Colleen Bullock says the 53-year-old victim, Malcolm Craig, is her younger brother. And Steve Brown, one of the accused, is her cousin. Story just sort of kind of gets crazier by the moment. So she was in court yesterday when Steve Brown was in court. He was there hoping to get the ankle bracelet they put on him to monitor him now that he's not in jail, that he didn't go to prison, be taken off. Thankfully, the judge said, no, that's not going to happen. But Corrine Bullock says she's shocked that Stephen Brown is involved in a crime like this.
He was our baby brother. He was not perfect, but nobody deserves murder like this. And his cousin has something to do with it.
So four suspects arrested in connection to the case on charges of first degree hindering prosecution, tampering with physical evidence, concealment of a human corpse. Now, they have not been charged with the murder of these two. Maybe that's coming. But they were, these two, Stephen Brown and Amanda Wallace, were in court yesterday where they were told that GPS monitoring device would have to remain in place. Corrine says that's a good thing.
The bail reform. It's absurd that four people can murder two people and just get to walk out like that.
Yeah, I mean, it is outrageous. The older brother of one of the victims was in court yesterday trying to explain just how upset he is.
We have parents. We've lost a brother. Stephen Brown is our cousin. And our parents and his mom, my aunt, they're home, they're suffering, they're hurting. And he has nothing to say.
Yeah, so the four have not been charged specifically with the killing of those two victims. So they were free to go until their next court appearance or if they face more charges. So again, let me point this story out if you haven't been following it. They are accused of chopping up these body parts to hide them in parks across Long Island, but apparently that's not enough to keep them behind bars. So this case has drawn attention to New York's bail reform laws, as many have wondered why these four would in any world be set free.
He's got to do something. He's got to tell it, good or bad or otherwise. He's got to tell his story so we can move on.
Yeah, that's the cousin. Again, this cousin who's involved, related to one of the people who was killed, but unbelievable these four somehow are still walking the streets. 67-year-old biker has died after a collision involving two bicyclists in Brooklyn yesterday. Officers racing to the scene. This was in Sunset Park about 5 o'clock yesterday. Reports of an accident. When they arrived, they found the 67-year-old male bicyclist on the ground at the location.
He just kept on grabbing onto his stomach. You know what I mean? Like, he had pain inside. And then he started turning pale. He was very pale.
Yeah, so the victim suffered trauma throughout his body, taken to NYU Langone Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. Police believe the victim collided with another bicyclist, fell off his e-bike, and eventually hit his head on the pavement. Surveillance footage shows two bikes and an incoming van all in a tight space. Now, there is a thought that the second bicyclist may not have even known that he was involved in an accident. How that's possible, I don't know. But the surveillance footage is kind of grainy. Maybe there's another camera nearby that'll tell us more.
Other people walked him over to this corner. So when he got here to the corner, he tried to get up on his own strength. When he got up on his own strength, he fell backwards, too, and he hit his head. I cried, bro. I tried to help him, bro. I tried to really help him.
Yeah, that was one eyewitness who tried to race to help this guy. Unfortunately, he passed away. We don't know who the other bicyclist is. He has not turned, or he or she has not turned themselves in, but they may not even have committed a crime. They may not have known they were in an accident. Police still investigating that at this hour. Do you remember how bad LaGuardia Airport used to be? Do you remember there was that time back in 2014 when then Vice President Joe Biden was talking about infrastructure across the country? And he's talking about how he thought that LaGuardia Airport was maybe the worst airport in the nation. And a lot of travelers agreed with him at the time.
If I took him blindfolded and took him to the LaGuardia Airport in New York, you must think I must be in some third world country.
Yeah, and a lot of people agreed with that notion. Now, fast forward to 2024. It is now LaGuardia, a traveler favorite after this major renovation was done. It won the Airport Service Quality Award as the best mid-size airport in America. And when you talk to people who were traveling to that airport yesterday, they say, yeah, it's a great airport to walk through now.
It's a beautiful airport. We've been commenting the whole time we've been here. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, so it wasn't a cheap. It cost about $8 billion for that makeover. It received a 4.24 out of 5 stars in this study. That's a 20% improvement rating from 2018 when passengers said it was the worst airport airport on the continent. So you figure in 6 years, they were able to do this makeover to make it number one. So sometimes government and private partnerships work well together. In this case, that was the case at LaGuardia Airport.
Well, it looks great. I haven't been here in a while, so the improvement is really, really well done.
This is not a bad airport. I prefer this to JFK.
Yeah, the airport drew more than 32 million passengers last year, breaking the previous record set in 2019. Six firefighters, four residents hurt after a fire broke out in the Bronx yesterday afternoon. FDNY Chief Malcolm Moore says the fire appears to be suspicious after it started underneath a staircase at the first floor of 36 Marble Hill. This was about 2:30 yesterday.
Quickly raced up the stairs into apartments on the second, third, and fourth floors, trapping several civilians, forcing others to evacuate onto the fire escapes.
So thankfully, all the injuries in this case appear to be minor. And this is what neighbors are telling us, that there were a bunch of e-bikes found underneath the staircase in this building. And they think the batteries exploded in those e-bikes. And that's what started this fire. The investigation is continuing. All right, 5:45. Let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk, where we find Justin Allen.
Thank you, Noam Lane. Start here in the NHL. And the Rangers at the Garden, where Zibanejad and Gustafsson scored in the second period. And the Rangers beat the rival Devils 3-1 last night. The Blue Shirts now make a quick trip down to Carolina, where they'll face off the Hurricanes tonight at 7 p.m. Out west in L.A., the Islanders' six-game winning streak was snapped at the hands of the Kings. Final score 3-0 last night. Local NBA action returns tonight with the Knicks getting set to welcome in the Philadelphia 76ers for the second of a two-game set at the Garden. Tip-off there is scheduled for 7:30 p.m. And now to the wild day that was yesterday with the arrival of free agency in the NFL. Try to get acquainted with your new faces on new teams, starting with the big news relating to New York City and the exit of now former Giants running back Saquon Barkley, who reached an agreement with the division rival Philadelphia Eagles on a three-year $37.75 million contract that could be worth up to $46.75 million and includes $26 million fully guaranteed at signing. A little bit steep in terms of price, but as an Eagles fan, I'll take it. Incoming,
it's going to haunt us, isn't it?
I don't know. It could very much as easily haunt me.
No, because his whole deal was playing on turf. He got hurt off, and now he'll be playing on grass. That'll help him.
Yeah, you're going to blame the turf? That's what we're doing?
Yeah, well, especially a Giant Stadium.
I would just blame your offensive line. I mean, my God.
Right, terrible offensive line. That's true.
Let's go right to the actual talent of the football team.
As a Giants fan, I know. All of a sudden, he's going to be fantastic with the Eagles. Watch.
Well, it's not like he wasn't fantastic with the Giants.
He was okay.
He ran for 962 yards last season. Yeah. The season before that, he ran for 1,300. I mean, the guy,
injured a lot.
Right, he only played 14 games this year. So at the end of the day, when the guy's healthy, he's one of the best running backs in the NFL. No disputing that. Incoming for the G-Men Gnome, a former Green Bay Packers guard John Runyon on a three-year deal. Former Las Vegas Raiders offensive tackle Jermaine Illuminor on a two-year deal. Former Houston Texans running back Devin Singletary on a three-year $16.5 million deal with up to $19.5 mil. He's going to be Saquon's replacement. And pass rusher Brian Burns, that's a big one for Giants fans from the Panthers. Via trade, the Giants are signing him to a five-year $150 million contract. Out in Jetsland, Gang Green signed cornerback Isaiah Oliver to a one-year deal. Chuck Clark is coming back on a one-year deal. Kicker Greg Zuerlein agreed to a two-year deal, which includes $4.2 million guaranteed. And lastly, former New York Giants quarterback Tyrod Taylor, who'll be Aaron Rodgers' backup, and former Baltimore Ravens guard John Simpson. Other notable moves around the league include Bengals releasing Joe Mixon and reaching a deal with Zach Moss. Quarterback Kirk Cousins leaving the Vikings for a four-year deal with the Falcons. Running back Josh Jacobs signing a four-year deal with the Packers. Running back Tony Pollard heading to Tennessee on a three-year deal. Running back DeAndre Swift leaving Philly for Chicago on a three-year deal. And running back Gus Edwards signs a two-year deal with the L.A. Chargers. A lot of running backs running around, funny enough. Come on, give me a little chuckle.
Oh,
here.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, that's your sports, and I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
Let's catch up on some of the big stories of the morning. Some of it will just be the cleanup from the high winds yesterday that caused all kinds of destruction across the tri-state. There were wind gusts as high as 50 miles per hour. Utility crews kept busy. Tree service is going to be really busy today. Lots of trees down. Wind gusts and a tree crashing onto a car in Prospect Park. Brooklyn, thankfully nobody hurt there. Up in Rockland County, a tree topped a power line, causing some outages in Ramapo. There are also several reports out of New Jersey where trees fell on houses. In Hillsdale, this massive tree crashed through a home right into a kitchen. The homeowner was there.
My kitchen's in the front, and all of a sudden I heard a crack, And I looked, and here comes this tree. The noise, I thought, oh, my God.
Now, she's the neighbor. The tree fell into her next-door neighbor's home. So she did what a good neighbor does. She ran over to make sure he was okay.
I rang his bell because I didn't know if he... I knew he was in the house. And I was like, oh, my God, and I'm ringing the bell.
I wonder how she knew he was in the house. Anyway, homeowner Michael Sokol was home at the time having a cup of coffee, sitting with his dog, and actually didn't even realize that a tree had crashed through his house, which is kind of amazing.
I was sitting there having coffee, and I heard, you know, bang, bang, and I thought maybe it was a truck from the grocery store unloading, you know, the stuff, and... Next thing I know, she's on my front steps.
Yeah, so it was more than a truck. It was a tree that went through the middle of your house. He's a first-time homeowner. We'll have some bills to pay now.
There was no warning. There was no snaps from the tree, you know, from the branches breaking off. It was just in the house.
Yeah, so a collapse at a building site under construction on Main Street in Fort Lee. They blamed that on the wind yesterday. Meanwhile, in Hoboken, a 33-year-old woman was walking on Washington Street, the busy thoroughfare there, when she was hit by a awning from a storefront. Lower back pain, and thankfully she's going to be okay. And that taking place the same day as the Passaic River and started to creep over its banks. Not as bad as it has been the last two times, which were in December and January. But for these homeowners who have been now flooded three times in about 2.5 months, well, maybe 3 months altogether, say they've had enough of it all and they can't take it.
My whole yard was flooded. Everything, yes. My son's room got destroyed. Look, it's already up. So I got to get ready for it.
Yeah, so yards submerged, especially those hugging the Passaic River, which is known for overrunning its banks. Thankfully, a catastrophic flooding not expected.
It just keeps getting worse and worse. They didn't even clean up all the garbage over there or nothing since the last two floods.
Meanwhile, earlier, Lodi was inundated with some rain flood, flooding streets. Some streets are hard to pass. Some of that receded overnight, so that's the good news.
Right now, I see it like it's going up, so we kind of worry.
Yeah, so this morning we're seeing water that slipped into backyards, basements, and in between low-lying parts of New Jersey. But again, not as bad as it was back in January, but of course, just a nightmare for these people who are still cleaning up from the flooding that took place in January. And that coming as Congressman Josh Gottheimer, he's from New Jersey, letting people know in Bergen County that federal money is coming to northern New Jersey to help with flooding problems in the future. $3.5 million approved to help with flooding related problems in four Bergen County communities that see these water problems all the time.
These surge floods, these massive incidents in short periods of time create such, they wreak such havoc because the systems weren't built to handle so much water in a short period of time.
Yeah, so I used to cover this part of North Jersey as a reporter and as an anchor, and the flooding happened, but it was kind of rare. Now it happens all the time. So the money is going to go towards Emerson, Leonia, Englewood, and Tenafly.
We've seen bridges collapse, roads cave, cars destroyed, homes gutted, and families left without a home.
Yeah, so Gottheimer says this federal money, it's going to go a long way because most small communities can't make the significant flood prevention investments because they just don't have the tax base in those towns, the money to do so. A great moment for a New Jersey journalist yesterday. He had been jailed in his native Nigeria for years. Yesterday, he got back home to New Jersey. Yele Sawari is back in the tiny Bergen County town of Haworth after nearly 5 years spent behind bars in Nigeria on what he called trumped up treason charges.
Sometimes I never thought I would make it back here alive.
The 53-year-old journalist and activist who edits a news website that's called Sahara Reporters was imprisoned after running for president in Nigeria back in 2019, losing, and then returning to Nigeria to organize a protest. And they didn't take too kindly to that, so they jailed him for 5 years.
When elections were badly mismanaged, went back and organized a protest, tagged the Revolution Now, and I was arrested before the protest could take place.
Yeah, so it was Josh Gottheimer, who we were just telling you about, who helped negotiate his release with Haiti. The Times Square Alliance, trying to convince both New Yorkers and tourists that the crossroads of the world is still safe, even amid a series of high-profile crimes.
Don't bother me. I can defend myself.
But I don't. It's not safe here. I'm here every day. It's crazy. It's ridiculous.
New York's full of characters. You just have to stay away from them. That's all.
I don't see a reason why anybody should be in a high panic mode.
Those are people who were in Times Square yesterday. So the Times Square Alliance just surveyed about 1,500 people from all over the world, including New Yorkers, and found that 83% of them say they feel fine walking the crowded sidewalks of Times Square.
You know, there is things that happen after hours and whatever, but I think that also comes with being just Times Square in general.
People want to tell you what they want you to hear, right? But overall, the city isn't what it was.
It's a lie.
It's bullshit. Because all the numbers are always bullshit. If fabricated.
Maybe they're right. Those who said they felt unsafe weren't necessarily concerned about crime, which was interesting in this study, but they were concerned with what they called beggars, bad experiences on the subway, and witnessing drug use. The poll was conducted in February following crimes in Times Square that included that bystander who was shot in a store and a group who beat up two NYPD cops. And New York City residents hoping to win big as Mega Millions and Powerball jackpots continue to grow. Bigsby on Bruckner Avenue up in the Bronx sold a second place Mega Millions ticket back in January. So lots of people have been lining up there to get their tickets for these jackpots, the Powerball, the Mega Millions.
I don't play regularly, but I do have numbers and then I just do random. You know, might as well. It'd be silly not to at least try. You never know.
Yeah, so the Powerball was last night. Nobody won. Now it's at $559 million. The Mega Millions is at $735 million. And, of course, people in line dreaming about what they would do if they win.
Pay my husband's credit cards off, invest, and buy a home.
Okay. I wonder how much those credit cards are. Mega Millions drawing, that is tonight at 11 o'clock.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.